This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
Come back to me in my dreams, dear. Come back to me once more. Come with love like gleaming as in the days of yore. Come tell me that you love me and let your heart be true. When the spring roses are blue, then I'll come back to you.
Hello and welcome to Mountain News. I'm Elizabeth Sanders. We begin this episode by celebrating the birthday of Wayne Henderson, a musician and instrument builder from Rugby, Virginia, who will turn 72 on May 3rd. Then we'll hear from Ashley Woodard Henderson, co-director of the historic Highlander Center in New Market, Tennessee, who talks about the fire that destroyed their main office building on March 29, 2019. We wrap the show up with a visit to the KVEC Fire Summit, where students from across eastern Kentucky gathered in Pikeville this April to demonstrate experiments and inventions they've created.
I was lonesome. Will you come back to me?
First, WMMT's Mimi Pickering brings us a short piece celebrating the music, craftsmanship, and birthday of Wayne Henderson.
This week we are celebrating the May 3rd birthday of Wayne Henderson, a man widely heralded for his unique finger-picking guitar style and the beautiful and extraordinary sounding instruments he builds. Henderson has lived all his life in Rugby, Virginia, also known as Mouth of Wilson. It's in the White Top Mountain area of Grayson County near the North Carolina border, a place that's been the home of many renowned mountain musicians. Following our excerpts from the Apple Shop film From Wood to Singing Guitar, which was directed by Sean Lind and released in 2009, the film takes place in Henderson's workshop, where we watch him build a guitar while taking breaks to play music with his friend Herb Key and assistants Gerald Anderson and Spencer Strickland. Herb Key is also heard commenting on the quality of Henderson's music and instruments.
In life I was silent, in death I now sing. Talking about a tree. When it was alive and standing up, it didn't make any noise. When it's a dead tree and cut up into wood, it can be made into violins and guitars and things like that that make noise and music. All my waking hours, I spend mostly in this shop. And the other thing I like to do is play music, and I do go out and do that some. But actually, my true favorite thing to do is just work in this shop. And I work in here, you know, as long as I can stay awake, usually.
It rings pretty long and a little high-pitched.
When I first had an interest in doing it, of any kind, you know, like just trying to make a guitar, and some of those very first ones I tried to make, I was probably 10. And I thought these guitars were pretty exciting things to work on. I thought it was a step up from the toys and stuff that I made when I was a kid. Eventually got, you know, making them because I couldn't afford to buy a good one, you know. So that top is getting pretty close.
He has this ability to play music on the instrument that he builds, and the combination of the two feed on each other, and that's why the guitars are so near perfect, you know.
It's the seventh one I made back in 1968, and I sold it trade it to the Moonshiners Branch.
When I told my granny, I said, if I can make money like this, I know what I'm going to do the rest of my life. I'm going to make these guitars, you know. And I was glad to get this old guitar back because it's got history with it, and it really looks beat up and all that. And I bet it looks pretty cool. I like it, you know.
Actually, when he got it back, it was in pieces, and we were going to try to just patch it up so we could hang it on the wall, but we just kept fooling with it, so we got it back to where it plays.
Well, that's what I grew up with, is a good pocket knife, and it's just my favorite thing. I just like using hand tools, and that's the ultimate hand tool, because you have it in your pocket most of the time, where you can put your hand on it anytime, and
he could look at anything and then carve it. It's just transfer of message he sees through his eye to his hands. He can do that. One of the few people that I've ever seen that can.
To me, I think wood talks to you all the time. It's a little bit hard to describe what I'm listening to, but I think that wood's, you know, is speaking to me all the time. You know, has something to say, every little vibration, ring, everything. As old as I am, I can still remember my childhood and how I grew up playing music and how important it was to me for somebody like E.C. Ball or Albert Hash or my dad or somebody to take time to play with me. And I just remember what a thrill that was. And it's just something I feel like I need to do, and I enjoy doing that. Well, this is one of those tunes that I learned from one of the older folks in the community, Mr. E.C. Ball. The tune is written right here in this community. One of E.C.'s tunes, while he's sitting out there at the store, made up this tune. It's a G round, and a C round, another G round.
I probably don't know it.
Well, you can do it. Living here where I do, was not exposed to that many different kinds of music and stuff. You know, we were pretty much, our music was homemade. EC was like a folk hero in this community here, and he did a nice job playing that guitar, made it sound good, and he was definitely an influence on me. Can't wait to make sound. Sometimes I'm amazed at it myself, you know, when I see something come out and I can't feel like, well, you know, I'm not sure I had that much to do with that. Stuff like that just happens, you know. You know, you feel like you must have bound to have been given some kind of a gift to do this stuff. Because if we can keep the kids playing, you know, learning to play, and I mean, that helps everything, you know. They'll be this old-time music, we'll always have it to listen to, and they'll, you know, those young kids grow up, they're going to be needing guitars. And so that's, something that's very important to me. You know, some of my guitars now bring just lots of money on the internet and stuff, which that means nothing to me. I don't sell them for prices like that. But if somebody's really out there using it, making pretty music on one of my guitars, that's the biggest compliment and the most exciting thing that can happen to me.
You've been listening to the Apple Shop film, From Wood to Singing Guitar, about master musician and instrument maker Wayne Henderson, who will be 72 on May 3rd. The full film is available online at the Apple Shop Store, www.appalshop.org.
Next on this episode of Mountain News, we'll hear from Ashley Woodard Henderson, co-director of the Historic Highlander Center. Highlander is an 87-year-old social justice center located on a 200-acre farm in New Market, Tennessee. Early in the morning of March 29th, the main office building was engulfed in flames. A symbol associated with the White Power movement was found spray-painted in the parking lot. The fire is still under investigation as an arson by local and national law enforcement. The following interview was conducted by journalist Mark Brown, a reporter for the Standard Banner, Jefferson County, Tennessee's newspaper, and took place at Highlander on Monday, April 1st, 2019. Brown shared the audio with us.
I was getting ready to do some travel for work. To represent Highlander in a few places, in New Orleans, out in the Bay. And then I got a phone call at 6 o'clock in the morning saying that the building was fully engulfed.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I got over here to the office. I happened to not be in New Market that day, that night. And so I got up here, and the major, like what you see is pretty much what was left of the building. Yeah. I think what I felt was a deep grief, and I think a lot of our broader Highlander family here in New Market, across the state of Tennessee, across Appalachia, and across the South and the country and the globe, is like a sense of a sacred space, like, you know, having this thing happen that doesn't happen here, and so I think that sort of shock was real. I think an immediate sense of like what actually happened and are we safe? Which I think is a question that a lot of people are asking, and rightfully so. I think that it was like a slow roll of like, oh my goodness, what was in there? And definitely some, but not all of our archival material was in that building. One, because a lot of our documents and videos and tapes and stuff of that nature are already in archives.
Right.
But also what's on site isn't all concentrated there. The reporting that we lost our archives, that's not true. But did we lose some information that we like really, 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 which we still had? Absolutely. And to be honest, that's a hit, right? To our psyche, to our historic memory, right? What's also real is that our folks have been amazing, going and looking at websites to see what curricula we still have online and like all these things. So we don't by any means count this a total loss of our archives. That's just not real. I think what's also simultaneously real and like a bit, like I literally the first thing that came to my mind is just deep gratitude that no one was in that building. That no one was physically hurt makes this not as devastating. Like people are like, we're so devastated. And it's like, yes, you get to feel that. This is devastating. What happened to us is devastating. And like, we can replace a building, you know, and you know, one of our founders, Miles Horton, when the state of Tennessee shut us down, when we were in Grundy County on Mont Eagle, our original spot, he said, you can padlock a building, but you can't padlock an idea. And I think that, you know, what we've seen in the response from our movement families all over the world is like, you can burn down a building, but you can't break the spirit of this place. And, you know, we have every intention of continuing to do the work that we do. I have gotten to see so much of the world because of my relationship to this place and the movements that we accompany. And like many, many, many of them see coming here is like a place to come home to. You know, it's a place that, it's infrastructure for movement. And so, you know, to say that like that office being burned to the ground isn't impactful would be a lie. It absolutely is. And what's also real is that we, fully intend to keep doing our work. We've already made accommodations to be able to do so. We've had folks literally from all over be like, they're down to support other institutions in Knoxville and Maryville. Like, we've gotten lots of love from other institutions that are like, y'all aren't going to skip a beat. You know, we're going to keep rolling. So definitely have been sort of like awestruck by how many people from how many places have been sending their condolences and love. To be honest, the biggest thing that's been the most consistent since Friday is just people being like, what can I do? What do y'all need? Can I send something? Have you eaten? Drink some water? Like, you know, it's like, that's the stuff that people have been the most consistent about. You know, they definitely have expressed their sadness. People are upset. You know, folks want to have answers from this investigation, and rightfully so. Movements all over have been under attack. You know, the marches that even happened over the weekend in Knoxville, at UT Knoxville, our people have every right to want some real answers.
What's your level of concern that it was something like that?
My level of concern is significant. And what I know is that, like, you can't stop a movement that's right on time. And I think that, like, there are literally people all over the world that are wanting to build a world where everyone has everything they need, right? A world that they deserve. It's really that simple, where everybody has everything they need. And what a world that would be, right? Like, 99% of harms that get created in communities probably wouldn't exist if everybody just had what they needed. And so, you know, even more than my significant concern and my call and Highlander's call for people to be vigilant in their love and support of each other and ensuring that each other is safe, even more than that, I have an incredible faith that the work of building that new world that we've always deserved, that particularly new South and new America that, like, has always needed to be born is on its way because of the work that people that come to this place do. Even over the weekend, for example, we had to make a quick call about whether or not we were going to cancel a group, not even a group. It was like, I don't even know, 55 people from all over Central Appalachia coming hours after the fire. And we decided that we weren't going to cancel their reservation. And it was folks literally from every Central Appalachian state to the tune of like 55 people at least to talk about how prisons are impacting our region within the region, right? Like Appalachia within the South. There were people from national organizations that are talking about what's happening to people inside cages and families that are impacted by incarceration, what it means for labor in our states. People that believe in the abolition of prisons. And so while all this was happening with the fire, there were like these incredible souls all coming together to figure out what we can do to take care of people that are incarcerated and what we can do to support the formerly incarcerated people's movement, which we know has like been a critical front line of struggle in the South. Whether it was the folks that won Amendment 4 in Florida and now formerly incarcerated people to the tune of 1.4 million people are going to get their rights restored so they can vote. Whether that's folks that are doing, you know, participatory defense work. There were so many people coming together not only identify problems, but to build shared vision and to figure out what they can concretely do with each other moving forward to see if we can get to a place where there's a world without people being in cages. So like even this weekend while we were, you know, trying to figure out what do we do with like, you know, a movement organization without an office, there were people to the tune of like 55 people from every Central Appalachian state talking about how to build that better world. So the work don't stop. We take care of each other. We feel these feelings. We do the work to heal from this trauma. But we still are in the work of being a catalyst for social movements. In a place that they can come, that won't change. Yeah. I have no fear that we will keep doing what we do. You know, it means something that people like Rosa Parks served here. People know the story about her training here. What they maybe don't know is that she served on the board of directors for years. You know, it means something that Septima Clark was on the staff, right? There's like, there's just, you know, I think we all of us that are from the mountains know that there's special medicine in this land. There is a complex and beautiful legacy of resistance and cooperation in our communities between the people that live in these communities across all of our differences. That's always been true here. And it's also been complex, right? We know that like people have been put in industries that have been bad for them and bad for the planet. We know that like, you know, people that get elected to represent us haven't always done so and passed policies that were in our best interest, right? We know that white supremacy and racism are real. We know that. We know that today. We know that it's unquestionable. And what we know is that like, you know, people have been coming together across those differences here at Highlander since 1932. We love that people in movement know that they can be here. And what's real is we have to do what we can, especially during this investigation and probably post this investigation, to make sure that people safely can be here. And so we're taking that very seriously.
We are solid as a rock.
That was Ashley Woodard Henderson, co-director of the Highlander Center, in an interview with Jefferson County, Tennessee-based reporter Mark Brown on April 1, 2019. Last in this episode of Mountain News, WMMT's Sydney Bowles brings us an update from the KVAC Fire Summit, which brought Eastern Kentucky youth together in Pikeville this April to share their innovative research.
Megan Lambert is experimenting with ways to make MRIs less toxic to human health.
So gold nanoparticles are a cancer detectant, and they're more efficient to attach to the smaller parts of, like, a said tumor in the body. So people actually intake the gold nanoparticles, and then they'll go get an MRI scan. But the solution that's made today, it has a toxic solution inside of it. So what I'm doing is replacing that solution with an herb that has medicinal values that gives me the same thing, just less toxic and better for people around here. My teacher, Dr. Haridas, gave me the idea, and they've been doing a lot of gold nanoparticle projects in the past, so I figured why not use Katsuyu. I'm gonna study biology at the University of Louisville next year.
Lambert is a senior at Belfry High School, and she's just one of thousands of students from all over East Kentucky gathered to share their accomplishments at the KVAC Fire Summit, which happened in Pikeville this April. In case you're wondering, FIRE stands for Forging Innovation in Rural Education. Students gave tours of tiny houses they'd built themselves, gave tastings of their homemade jams and salsas, and presented experiments they'd been working on all year.
My name is Jacob Blackburn. I'm from Belfry High School, and I'm a senior. So what we're doing basically is we're trying to find another use for kudzu, like as far as like a material wise. So we're working on making bricks and like other little things out of kudzu to see if it's like usable as far as like insulation or like a type of building material, stuff like that. So we're using all organic materials as far as like using them to bind the kudzu to each other and stuff like that. And then basically we just like chop it all up and then blend it together with some water. We have a brick mold and we press out all the water and moisture and then we bake it. And so we're going to see, because it's kind of not like strong enough to be used as like an outside brick, but maybe like insulation type things for poorer areas, because it's very like accessible and then like easy to manufacture. So we have another group using kudzu as like 3D printer filament. Yeah, so we kind of just like, we're like, oh, we have a lot of kudzu, so.
So last summer, we were in a workshop type camp, and they had us trying to come up with an idea to revitalize our city, and we wanted to mainly focus on our downtown. Right now, our downtown's like a ghost town. We have dozens of buildings, and only 10 to 15 of them are filled right now, or being occupied, and we definitely want to change that. So we were trying to figure out a way to bring things downtown. And a majority of everybody likes coffee, and so we figured that was our gateway to open up downtown. And right now during the summertime, it was just like a idea that a couple of high school students had. Now we are in downtown and we have created a business out of it. We are located on 561 Main Street and we're doing pretty good so far.
That's really cool. And you must feel really proud.
Yeah, and we also open down in our high school every Monday and Friday.
What's the best part?
Probably just getting to work in it.
Andrew Nugent and Dakota Sharpie are in 11th grade at Hazard High School. They designed 3D digital floor plans of vulnerable buildings to help first responders navigate unfamiliar places in an emergency. Here's Nugent.
Okay, so basically our project is creating floor plans and everything that are easily accessible to first responders in high-risk buildings, such as schools or hospitals, something like that, especially buildings they've never been to before. And this will help them get through rooms faster and help people as fast as they possibly can. Originally, it started out as just filling in spaces such as like landmarks or, you know, old historical buildings that had been destroyed by fires or other natural disasters. And then we got the idea to create our school, which, you know, kind of for the fun of it. And our school officer, he wanted a copy of it so he could easily navigate the school, and that gave us the idea to start making this for first responders.
Sharpie says some schools in the region have expressed interest in getting their own floor plans, and the pair have presented their business at conferences in the region. They hope to continue with the project after graduation. Andrew Castle is with the Kentucky Valley Education Cooperative, or KVAC, which supports school districts in offering this kind of unique programming. He says he's constantly amazed at what Kentucky students come up with.
You know, sometimes it's kids that you might not think as being the academic type, per se. You know, they're vocational ed, but it really needs to be shown because these kids are smart, articulate, and very, very driven. And oh my goodness, they do such a great job. Talk about an invaluable learning experience for them.
Castle said the KVAC Fire Summit is also important for teachers. It's a time for them to be seen as professionals outside the classroom. One of those teachers is Norm Markham, who teaches business skills to middle schoolers in Prestonsburg, Kentucky. He even helps them start their own businesses.
A lot of what they learn here is practical. Well, why am I doing math in school? Well, here's why you're doing math. And why am I learning to do research? Here's why you're doing research. I try to think of where these kids, what their options are going to be. For these are middle schoolers, so 6 years, 8 years, 10 years down the road. We're in a transition economy from coal. In my classes, we're going through careers, and they're learning about what their skills are, what their desires are, and then trying to match those things with what they're doing here. You'll see some of that start to rise. I mean, especially with some of these kids that didn't necessarily think they wanted to go into something like sales, but when they get out here, suddenly the lights turned on, and that person that's been kind of reserved in the classroom suddenly is the spokesperson of the year, and it's like, hey, you could do this for a living. It's like, okay, I can do that. You see the light bulbs go off? That's really fun.
There were so many amazing projects at the Fire Summit, there's no way we could tell you about all of them. But there's one thing we learned for sure. It's that here in our mountains, creativity and innovation are in no short supply. For WMMT, I'm Sydney Bowles.
Come back to me in my dreams, dear. Come back to me once more.
Come. That's it for this episode of Mountain News. Music on this episode features Otis Maggard and Lois Fuller with a tune called When the Spring Roses Are Bloomin' from their album Southern Melody, which was produced by Appleshop's own June Apple Recordings. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can find them on our website at wmmt.org or find Mountain News as a podcast on SoundCloud or Stitcher. I've been your host, Elizabeth Sanders, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.